You're listening to The Stack, first broadcast on the 8th of March 2014 on Monocle 24.
The Stack is piled high with a whole range of titles for review. High-end fashion with added tech features, a new title for one very holy man, and a big name in music that has set its eyes on print. Monocle 24 is hitting the presses to bring you our take on the global newsstand. On The Stack this week, we'll review some titles, new and old, with Stack's good friend and trusted advisor, Jeremy Leslie of Mag Culture. And as many of our listeners will be abstaining from those little treats during Lent, we'll be indulging in a new mass-market Italian title that is to bring His Holiness that little bit closer to the people.
It looks like a traditional news weekly that talks about the love lives of actors and movie stars and politicians getting up to no good. So you have to really sort of concentrate and look closely, and then you see Pope Francis waving to the crowd.
All that and plenty more besides on this 80th edition of The Stack here on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to Studio One here at Midori House for this edition of The Stack with me, Tom Edwards. Today we're very lucky to be joined by an old friend of the programme, the founder and manager of Mag Culture, a company specialising in content design for print and digital media. Many of our listeners will know Jeremy Leslie from his blog, magculture.com, a fantastic and ever-expanding resource for print aficionados. Today Jeremy has brought with him a selection of magazines that have caught his eye for all the right, let's hope it's mainly them, but perhaps also for the wrong reasons. We shall be finding out. Jeremy, welcome back to the programme. Great to have you with us, as always.
Always nice to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Now, you've been in Munich, haven't you, of late?
Yes.
Just tell us about what you've been doing there, because it's been, well, I was asking before, was it sort of a bit of work, a bit of pleasure? Mm-hmm. It sounds like it was mainly work, but
I'm lucky to be working in an area which is pleasurable. So, I mean, I love magazines, and I was out there. I helped organise a three-day conference about editorial design as part of Munich Creative Week. I call it QVED. They seem to pronounce it QVED locally.
when in Rome, or
absolutely.
Munich, as it might be.
So QVED it should be. Quo Vadis Editorial Design is the name of the full name. We had 3 days of speakers from all areas of the world and from all types of magazines. And so it was work, but it was very pleasurable.
That's good. That's the perfect kind of work.
Absolutely.
And tell me about what's the sort of general ambience there? How would you gauge the sort of reaction, the optimism in, mm-hmm. in your field? Were people very upbeat? A lot of good news stories in print out of the region, and I guess more broadly internationally? Or?
Well, I think when you get a big room full of magazine people, we're generally kind of quite half full rather than half empty type people anyway. So there's always a pretty good vibe. I've been to other conferences where it's more design orientated, and it can be a little bit more of a frisson of negativity and sort of angst about.
We don't want that.
You know, and that's not good. That's not healthy, is it? So, but magazine people are happy people. So there's that back against that context. I'd have to say it was very upbeat nonetheless. It was a particularly upbeat session. I think one thing that shone through particularly, with one or two exceptions, that it felt like the digital part of publishing was really coalescing around away from the iPad as being any type of saviour, and moving towards more pure online and social media rather than kind of device-centric.
That's interesting. I wonder what, I mean, in terms of broad trends, is that something that perhaps you'll take away mostly? What about design-wise? Was there any sort of key themes or, you know, should we be looking out for in terms of 2014, looking ahead to 2015? Or was it more that kind of, that old balancing act of, you know, the print, the digital, that kind of thing?
No, but I think, you know, over the last few years, there's been a lot said about print and digital, and we've got the stage now where it's just a given. It's just, you know, we're beyond should we, shouldn't we? It's just, so there was lots of talk about it dropped into the conversation naturally rather than somebody sort of having to ring a bell and say, ooh, digital. And there was one very good talk in particular from a chap from Eden Spiekermann, a big German branding design agency. He did a very good talk about being reader stroke user centric in how you design digital work. And it was very strong and it was pushing towards the kind of Snowfall and some of the kind of more web HTML created content rather than stuff that's created specifically for iPad or other devices.
Intriguing, intriguing thoughts. Jeremy, it's The Stack. You have a healthy stack of magazines with you today. Maybe let's kick off. Let's have a look at something. Where should we begin? What about Pitchfork Review? You've got this one with you, haven't you?
That's where I would start. Yes, absolutely.
Let's kick off with that.
In a way, it's a very interesting development in terms of what we were just talking about, because the Pitchfork is one of the leading music sites for reviews and news about music globally. Certainly it's American, it's very US-centric, but it's, you know, the web has no boundaries, and it's a very, very popular website. And a website, interestingly, that has largely been attributed as the cause for the demise of a lot of the music press. Obviously, with music itself has gone digital, and with it, a lot of the news provision and discussion about music has moved from print to digital alongside that. But the Pitchfork's been at the fore of that. And yet now, they have just a couple of months ago released their first publication, their printed publication, the Pitchfork Review, which is a beautiful item. It's a very interesting read. It's a lovely thing. But it's a really interesting development, I think, for a website of their scale and their reach, and it has done what it has done to the printed word, to turn around and actually start producing in this realm as well.
Absolutely. It's an interesting mix, as you say, but this is a sort of a brand that understands, you know, live events, it understands digital, and now it looks like it understands print. Tell us a bit about the actual appearance, the feel of the magazine. Describe it. Paint a picture with words, if you will, Jeremy.
Well, if you know your independent magazines, it's a familiar format. It's perfect bound. It's quite thick paper. The papers vary. There's a large photographic session dealing with the events you mentioned, which is on gloss paper. Then the rest of it's on a lot of matte stock. There's a really good mix of photography and illustration.
Pretty striking artwork in there.
Absolutely.
From a cursory flick through, yeah.
Well, it's a lot of very strong illustration. There's comic strips. And the coverage, there is material that has been published online, but there's also new writing. And in particular, I was particularly intrigued by, and they're kind of acknowledging the kind of slight irony to what they're doing with the piece by Simon Reynolds, who's a British writer, about the music press and growing up with the NME and Sounds and the kind of inky red and black weeklies, which is what I grew up with and what I first got into magazines through. So they're very, very conscious of the situation in which they're operating. It's a lovely piece with lots of nostalgic references.
Well, I was going to ask you a bit more detail about that, because there is this interesting idea, isn't there, about, I guess, acknowledging not just the heritage, but also a bit of a debt to that sort of journalism, that kind of print matter. Do you think that perhaps this is showing the way for some of these other brands who maybe are better known from their digital presence, or better known from their, you know, events that they might do?
Yeah.
You know, it's saying, come on, pull your socks up, deliver us some print products. You've made a niche, you've got the success, you've maybe got the capital to throw at it. Give something back.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, having said that, you know, you're beginning to see it more and more. I mean, the pile of magazines being produced by people that have started out as web publishers. We're going to move on to have a look at one in a minute, but Protein now have Journal Review. This is the language
the
of this publishing. And there are sites. I mean, they're one of the speakers at Qued was the creative director from FVF, the big German site. They've done several books and they're moving into publishing linked magazines and such like.
Do they do as good a job? I mean, it's a tough one to answer, I guess, but without that sort of pedigree, the traditional print background, if you like, if you're coming from the digital realm into print, do you think that these magazines are as successful, or do you think there's necessarily some harder sort of humps to overcome, hoops to jump through to sort of do it that way around rather than the traditional way?
That's a very interesting question. They're mixed, aren't they? I would say. I mean, I think Pitchfork, for a launch issue, is a beautiful thing. Whereas, it's hard to point to any that have done a poor job, I think, to be honest. I mean, I think I think it points to this idea that there's a kind of hierarchy of content where, you know, the blogging and producing stuff online is fine, but that's very quick and iterative, and it just comes and goes. And I think people, both making and reading, want something which actually has got a little bit more care and attention has been paid to it, in the knowledge that it's going to sit on your desk or shelf for some time and have a longevity, that the stuff online just evaporates.
Those are the insights of Jeremy Leslie from Mag Culture. And we'll be hearing more from Jeremy as he and I continue to delve through his handsome stack of magazines that he has with him here in Studio One today. But before that, we're going to be heading to Italy. As millions of Italians woke up this Ash Wednesday to begin the first day of Lent, they miraculously found a brand new title. Il Mio Papa, or My Pope, is a magazine that's targeted to many of the country's Catholics and beyond. Such has been the popularity of Pope Francis that not only is his new style doctrine, but also his lifestyle, movements and even thoughts attracting much attention. Here steps in Mondadori, Italy's most powerful publishing house. Seeing a gap in the market, Mondadori chose an appropriate day to try and profit from the pontiff. And they weren't shy about it. My Pope magazine kicked off with a modest 500,000 copy print run and aims to be a staple fixture of the weekly celebrity-driven rag circuit. What does this say about the strength of print in Italy? Or what does it say about the strength of the Pope himself? A little earlier, David Pleasant spoke to our correspondent in Italy, Ivan Carvalho.
O Dio nostro Padre, concedi al popolo cristiano di iniziare con questo digiuno un cammino di vera conversione.
Italians woke up on Ash Wednesday to a surprise, and it was a new news weekly, if you can call it that. Il Mio Papa, which is my Pope. The Catholic world has its own news weekly dedicated to all the comings and goings of Pope Francis.
What's quite surprising about this is just how, how similar it is to some of the other magazines available on the Italian newsstand. What kind of pitch are Mondadori going for in terms of the style and format of this this new magazine?
Yeah, I was curious about that, because if you're walking by the newsstand, you have to really do a double take, because the graphic layout, the cover looks very similar to the news weeklies, sort of these tabloid gossip magazines that Mondadori, which is a publishing house that Berlusconi owns. The font, the block lettering, the titles, it looks like a traditional sort of news weekly that talks about the love lives of actors and movie stars and politicians getting up to no good. So you have to really sort of concentrate and look closely, and then you see Pope Francis waving to the crowd. So it is curious. They haven't gone for some sort of new look. They've just basically taken something that's kind of boilerplate and just rearranged the titles and put in some Vatican headlines, Pope doing this, some of the news stories about what the Pope's going to be doing in the coming months in terms of state visits and what have you.
And that leads me to my next question, and I think it's what a lot of people are intrigued by. This is mass market publication, a really huge print run. But what are they going to fill the pages with? What kind of stories are there in there? Because there has been some controversy over how much involvement the Vatican itself has with the editorial. They presumably want to limit what is said about the popes. So where are they going to get their stories from, the editors here?
Well, you know, it's quite incredible how many pages, you know, they're hoping to fill for this news weekly. You know, it's a print run of 500,000. It only costs 50 cents. The paper quality, the stock is what you'd see in the traditional gossip news weeklies. And there are stories from, today, this week, the Pope on this day had a flu. So they're sometimes grasping at straws. They're, of course, giving coverage to the Angelus on Sundays at noon when he gives his speech from St. Peter's Square, and they show the crowd. This being, the lead up to Ash Wednesday, they had people, shots of people in the crowd dressed up for carnival, the Pope out amongst the people, lots of shots, obviously, of the Pope among his flock. It's going to be interesting how many different ways they can talk about the Vatican, maybe go into the gardens. There's some information on the gardens of the Vatican opening up to visitors. So they're going to try to fill out some of the pages with the Holy See, what's going on. But really, I mean, we're going into sort of microscopic analysis of everything around the life of this pontiff.
Does this say something about the strength of print in the Italian kind of media landscape? It is quite a big, you say it is a fairly cheap cover price, but at the same time, it's a big kind of gesture. It's a huge print run. They're really hoping that people will add this to their pile of magazines, of rags that they want to buy every week. I mean, Italians are familiar with a whole plethora of different gossip and celebrity journals. Mondadori are fairly confident that they'll want to get this one as well.
No, I think, it all comes down to the popularity of this pontiff. I mean, Pope Francis really, across the board, I mean, I've never come across anybody so far in talking with people in the cafes or just in interviews with people, and even when I go abroad, he is very well liked. And, Mondadori is looking to tap into this popularity. I mean, this pontiff is one who gets among his flock. He takes pictures with worshipers, you know, using their smartphones. So Mondadori sees that there's a massive, massive appeal, and they believe that readers want to know all the intricate details, you know, what the Pope is doing today, where did he sit at a meeting, you know, even this thing about the, even sort of the nitty gritty of, you know, today he had a cold. I mean, it's quite amazing, this sort of celebrity that's developed, this sort of cult of celebrity around this pontiff. We saw a bit of it with Pope John Paul II. Obviously, with Pope Benedict, we didn't see that. And Mondadori believes that this can really be a great seller for them, because with a 500,000 print run, they're obviously betting big.
Now, Ivan, tell us about the editor of Il Mio Papa.
Right. Aldo Vitale, the editor of this weekly, it's funny, you know, his background is not one who's been covering the Pope with one of the news agencies or the various Catholic newspapers. He actually comes from, it's a weekly that's sort of a TV guide, People magazine mix. And so obviously it shows you that the intention here is to cover the Pope a little bit more informally. You know, for example, there, you know, there's a pull-out centerfold, which may sound a bit scandalous. There will be a centerfold pullout every week with a picture of the Pope and a quote. And just this week, just to give you an example, the Pope is saying that, you know, don't stand by on the sidelines, you know, in life. Jesus wasn't on the sidelines, you know, get yourself into the mix, sort of. And so this is, you know, quite curious that we have a news weekly that with a pullout every week, but it's going to be a picture of the Pope. So, you know, again, this thing to going back to this celebrity appeal. So obviously the editor is sort of one who knows the TV landscape and how well actors and actresses sell on the cover. So it's sort of the same strategy here now.
That was Monocle's Milan correspondent speaking to our producer David Pleasant about the launch of Il Mio Papa on My Pope magazine.
If you're after a soundtrack to your working day, look no further than Monocle 24's Globally Minded playlist. We play the very best upbeat music from around the world, around the clock. Whether that's jazz from Japan, pop from Paris, house from Hamburg, or soul from Seoul. It's all picked by our team and presented by our editors. So get lost in music with Monocle 24's playlist right here, day and night, on Monocle 24.
Hello, welcome back to The Stack with me, Tom Edwards, standing in for Tyler Brulé. This week, I'm joined in the studio by Jeremy Leslie of Mag Culture. He's still here. He's not going anywhere just yet, because there's so many more exciting magazines to talk about. Now, we were looking at Pitchfork, weren't we, Jeremy, a moment or two ago. Where should we head next? What about, I don't know where, I don't know what you want to, but you got Printed Pages jumping out at you. Now, I have an older copy. I have the summer vintage from last year. A slender volume, elegant, but slender, beautiful stock. A little bit of a change. Describe to us the new edition you have before
Absolutely.
Us.
Absolutely. Well, before I go on to describe how it's changed, it's a subtle change, but it's a significant change. I think it's worth noting, again, the editor of this particular project was at CFED, and he was talking about the process they've been through, and it's very interesting in terms of the context of what we were just talking about, how they've worked on their magazine project. The It's Nice, that website, has a fantastic reputation and many, many readers across the world. And they've been working in print, and they've been very publicly kind of developing it in print and sort of very openly. And the editor's letter always discusses the latest moves with the magazine and how they're developing and how they're changing it. And I think this is something alongside the piece in Pitchfork about the context, the historical music press. I think these magazines, or these publishers of working in magazines, are very conscious of where they are and where they're coming from and trying to move things and develop things in a really interesting and open way. So what's happened this time, there's more pages. The price has gone up £1 from £4 to £5. It's now perfect bound, which adds a really
reassuring
healthy
heft
weight.
To it,
yes,
it?
Yeah. Absolutely. There's a wobble, wobble, bang, bang to it.
But will it still be familiar to people who, you know, it's nice that aficionados who maybe who've
it's
been
as I say, it's significant
pages.
In terms of you sort of fit, it somehow feels more valuable, but if you see it on the shelves, you'll recognise it instantly. It's still called Printed Pages. It's got a lovely spring image of an orange and I think an egg on the cover.
Very, very elegant.
And it's very much a magazine kind of growing into itself.
It's good. We welcome it. And as we said, people will recognise the familiar traits of printed
Absolutely.
Pages. They'll be reassured. Anything that sort of grabbed you in particular, stylistically?
Against the context of the changes as discussed and the kind of the way they're approaching this sort of discussing those changes, there is also, of course, I mean, it is a great magazine. It has been since it launched. It has a really intelligent, broad selection of content, which is really intriguing. There's always some surprises, but there's also some bankers as well. They've got, I mean, from my point of view in particular, or our point of view here at Stack, there's an interview with Richard Turley, the creative director from Bloomberg Businessweek, who has just designed a one-off magazine for SUP, the little indie music magazine, another music magazine. So they've talked to him about that project, which is very interesting. But otherwise, it's a familiar mix of illustrators, creators, but you know, really quite a very carefully created selection of people.
I think it's elegant, the look to it always.
Yeah,
it has a certain kind of refinement to it, which I...
Well, they tread a really lovely line between being very refined and serious and proper, but there's also, every time they play around with the headlines, there's always a little kind of trick going on with the headline. Little font
bit,
thing
bit of
going
levity.
On.
You need a bit of levity.
Absolutely.
Well, another big name, L, of course. Talk about L Collections. That's another one hiding.
Yes, that's just under this other magazine, which I do hope will come.
We will. Don't you worry.
We've got to come to that.
We said the rights and wrongs. And there's something that you're not such a fan.
L Collections has, you know, comes out twice a year alongside each fashion season, and it's just this wonderful playground for the editors and designers. It's always gorgeous. It's always changing. I think it owes, you know, I think. Ian Bertram Hearst is another familiar voice on this show, and I think Hearst are doing some very interesting things where they've got their main brand, and then they're doing various spin-offs to try and sort of see what else they can do alongside those brands. And I think L Collections is a great example of a monthly fashion glossy going a little bit left field and learning from some of the smaller magazines what you can do with paper and production.
And do you think there's ever a risk then with those kind of spin-offs of, you know, losing a bit of, you know, editorial direction, but, you know, being, you know, sort of spreading yourself too thinly?
Obviously things can, I mean, you know, iPad production is an example of spin-offs which really does stretch the production team too thin often. But I think this, I mean, something like reports on the new seasons, these are things that are being done anyway. I mean, they're almost kind of... it's a little, in a way, it's almost like a kind of printed version of a blog. It's a kind of research tool. All the editors and people have been off to Milan, Paris, everything. They've done all the research because they have to do that because it's going to feed into the main monthly issue anyway. But so it's a kind of like an emptying out of all that research into a biannual special. You know, one of the signs of a successful magazine is a feeling that the people working on it have enjoyed themselves. And I think, you know... The enjoyment shines through every page.
It does. Well, there's a riot of colour. There's a lot of energy. It's very dynamic. I mean,
there's a real feeling that, you know, well, I mean, maybe it's saying it's going to last you 6 months is to exaggerate its longevity, but it's a really, really in-depth. There's a lot to look at, a lot to take in. It's going to last you some time.
Which is great. You can treasure it.
Absolutely.
Look at it as the months roll by. Let me give you your forum then, though, for a magazine perhaps you're... Slightly, is it fair to say, slightly less sure about? It's a magazine we've touched upon before, Porter, of course, the powered by Annetta Porter, as they say.
Yes.
And we touched upon it before, and we talked about how, you know, it's tried to probably follow a lot of the, how should we say it, maybe conventional, glossy sort of rules, if you like.
Yeah.
It doesn't perhaps look as a truly sort of innovative product, perhaps. Is that fair? What have you made of it? Is it an opportunity missed in some regards? What do you make of Porter?
Well, I think you've put it very well there. I think it absolutely is a missed opportunity. It is and will remain one of the biggest launches in print publishing for some time. It's very disappointing to see them play such a kind of straight, middle-of-the-road kind of, I don't know, there's just, you know, the other things we've already spoken about really have an understanding of their place in publishing and what they're trying to do, and there's a really clear strategy and they're being innovative and trying things. And I see there's two things that kind of art direction and design offer. I mean, to boil it right down,
that's we like
things.
That we like it, keep it simple.
First of all, it's the basic design on the page. It's helping and navigating and explaining the magazine to the reader, and then also it's providing character. So the magazine has to work in a basic functional sense, and then it has to be itself. It has to kind of feel like, oh, they've identified a personality and a character, and they know what's special about their magazine. Unfortunately, I think it falls down on both fronts. I think largely Some of the typeface has been used for the long texts are very hard to read. So on that side, it's failing. And then on the in terms of character, I spent the whole of the noughties working at one of the world's biggest kind of customer publishers as creative director. And we made a lot of magazines there, some of which were had to be relatively straight and others of which had clients who were, you know, let us be very innovative. And this, it just, it's missed so many opportunities to be something special.
Work still to do, perhaps, then.
Perhaps.
Now, we can't end on a negative note, though. So you've been at CVED in Munich. I hope I said that correctly. I try my best to learn.
I hope I said it correctly.
we've seen a nice array before us. What's, on an upbeat note, lots of great magazines in your stack, lots of optimism at CVED. We should end with our usual sort of celebratory note, shouldn't
we? Okay, absolutely.
It's all good in the world of printed media, isn't it? We shouldn't have any, despite the occasional things that maybe don't quite deliver to our very exacting standards.
Oh, I know. Well,
we should strike a positive note at the
absolutely.
End.
Absolutely, we can be positive. I mean, there's plenty. You know, I think there's lots of magazines out there, and they're all jostling, and some aren't as good as others. And I think it's worth acknowledging that occasionally. But there are great magazines, and I think the new issue of the Gentlewoman has just come out, which I think in that similar-ish market is another fabulous issue. And out in Munich, there were magazines, Riposte, who I think Danielle's been on the programme, is she the editor? And Pekka from Fat Magazine, which I know is a favourite of everyone here. David Moretti from Italian Wired gave a fantastic talk about his work establishing that brand there. And there's lots of goodness. There's lots of goodness.
Lots of goodness. What a note to end on. Jeremy Leslie from Mag Culture, thanks so much for joining us, as always.
You're welcome.
Here on this 80th edition of The Stack. That is all we have time for. Our studio producer was David Pleasant behind the glass. Here at Midori House was Claire Urban. If you have any comments or queries, as always, drop us a note. info@monocle.com is what you need. Remember, we'll return next Saturday at the same time. Of course, you can always listen again at monocle.com or via iTunes. But for now, that's all from me. Goodbye.